photophobia, which is extreme sensitivity to light. For migraine patients, it is clearly an experience where light make the headache more painful. It's an exacerbation of headache by light. And what is unique to migraine headache is that it makes the headache more painful wherever the head hurts. If the head hurts in a temple, it makes the temple pain more painful. If it hurts in the back of the head, it makes the pain in the back of the head more painful.
The 2010s ushered in the screen generation, people like us who are completely dependent on our smartphones, tablets, computers, ebook readers, and big screen TVs. And for people with migraine, this increased screen time aggravates light sensitivity and elevates our blue light exposure, making migraine more painful. New groundbreaking research led by our next guest reveals how different types of light exposure affect migraine and what you can do about it in the decade ahead. Dr. Rami Burstein is a professor of anesthesia and neuroscience at Harvard Medical School and vice chair of anesthesia, critical care, and pain medicine research at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center in Boston. And he's been studying migraine for over 20 years. He is one of the leading global experts on migraine neurobiology, pioneering new research on how migraine alters the nervous system through light, touch, and triggers. Dr. Burstein, welcome to the Migraine World Summit.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Wonderful. Well, sensitivity to light is a big issue for a lot of people. You know, many people with migraine report that light actually hurts when we have a migraine. So how common is photophobia for people with migraine?
So migraine is commonly associated with photophobia, which is extreme sensitivity to light. For migraine patients, it is clearly an experience where light makes the headache more painful. It's an exacerbation of headache by light. And what is unique to migraine headache is that it makes the headache more painful wherever the head hurts. If the head hurts in a temple, it makes the temple pain more painful. If it hurts in the back of the head, it makes the pain in the back of the head more painful, if it hurts behind, around the eye or behind the eye, it makes the pain behind the eye more painful, which is very different than photophobia that blind patients experience. Blind patients wear sunglasses most of the time. The reason why they wear sunglasses is not because cosmetically they are embarrassed about their eyes. They wear sunglasses because even though they're blind, light make their eyes painful. Their eyes hurt when they are exposed to light. But what hurts is the outside of the eye. There is nothing in common between sensitivity to light that other people have than sensitivity to light that migraine patients experience, where light makes their headache more painful wherever it hurts.
That's fascinating to me because when I have a migraine attack, it feels like my eyelids are not thick enough to block the light. You did some interesting research with people who are blind and have migraine. Tell us about that.
So we were all interested in how light makes the headache more painful. Light is a part of the visual system. Pain is a part of the sensory system. The two pathways are not supposed to talk to each other. Touch is touch, pain is pain, vision is vision. The way we see things and the way we form images so that I can look at you and understand your face or look at a plant and understand it is a plant should have nothing to do with pain perception. And as we got into this field, there was an ongoing debate that was not solved for many years on whether the optic nerve is required to induce photophobia, exacerbation of headache by light, or whether it is the trigeminal nerve, which is a sensory nerve. So we went and found migraine patients who are blind to the extent that they don't have an optic nerve because the optic nerve was destroyed by stroke or inflammation or whatever, and found out that without optic nerve, there is no photophobia. It was the blind patient who told us that. But then, blind patients, there are many forms of blindness in human in eye disease. There are blind patients who don't have optic nerve, but there are many blind patients who are born into genetic disease that are called retinitis pigmentosa, Leber's congenital amaurosis, where the retina itself degenerates and they lose all their photoreceptors. These patients are called light without sight. They can detect the light, but they cannot form images. It's like if you close your eyes, you can tell whether there is a light in the room or whether there is dark in the room, but you cannot form any images because your eyes are closed. This patient taught us more about photophobia than the patient who don't have the optic nerve. Because to our surprise, these patients who are blind, who no longer have retina, are still experience exacerbation of headache by light during migraine. And the reason for that is because 1 to 2% of all the retinal ganglion cells, the neurons that send signal from the retina to the brain, contain a photoreceptor that is called melanopsin that is sensitive only to blue light. And blind patient like this would tell you that the light, that the color that makes their headache more painful is along the blue wavelengths. We actually figured it out among the Mormon community in Utah, because they have a lot of intermarriages and retinitis pigmentosa runs in the families. And when we talk to these patients, 2-3 generations of patients with retinitis pigmentosa, we found out that the days where the headache is most exacerbated by light is on days that are snowy and heavy clouds, not on sunny, bright days. On these days, a lot of the light is filtered by the clouds, and what comes are mostly the blue wave. And this patient, blue light can still produce pupillary light reflex when the pupil constrict to light, even though they are blind, and they can keep their biological rhythm. They go to sleep on time, they wake on time, they eat on time, because the blue light serves as a biological trigger, biological Zeitgeber, it's called in German, where it is what set up the biological clock every day with the light. It's the blue light.
Fascinating. That's like the circadian rhythms, right?
That's correct.
What did that tell you about the pathophysiology of migraine and the role of the optic nerve?
So what it told us is that in order for migraine patients to have the experience of photophobia, of light make the headache more painful, the optic nerve must somehow communicate with the migraine pathway somewhere in the brain. So we were tracing it, we looked for it, and we found it. We found a group of neurons in a very distinct and small area in a part of the brain that is called the thalamus that process the pain signal that come from the meninges, from the dura during migraine. And these few neurons receive direct input from neurons that send signal from the retina through the optic nerve and the optic tract into these neurons. When we turn on light, these neurons begin to fire, send electrical signal at a much higher frequency than when they were in the dark. So it is neurons that are activated during migraine in a part of the brain that's called the thalamus, increase their activity when the light comes on and decrease their activity when we turn off the light. Now, what is important about these neurons is that these neurons tell the cortex what is going on, where the perception of pain, of headache is generated. So if they send 1,000 signals a second, it will be more painful than if they send 50 signals a second. So the blind patient told us, look, follow the optic nerve to figure out where vision and the pain of migraine crosstalk. And two things came out of it. One that explained to us why light, how is it that light makes the headache more painful? And another one that was equally important that explained to us why migraine patients have experience visual disturbances, blurry vision, double vision, colors that are saturated, too washed out, too saturated, too orange look red, and or orange look white, a whole host of things that tell us that light, that the pain of headache and light and vision communicate at multiple levels, not only in the somatosensory cortex, where the perception of headache is generated, but also in the visual cortex, where the perception of vision is generated.
So we talked about the research that you did with blind patients. What are the implications for people with normal eyesight? What kind of light do we perceive?
Okay, I'm glad you asked this question for the following reason. When I came up with the first series of papers on the fact that blue light makes the headache more painful, because I studied blind patients who don't have a retina and only have the few photoreceptors that are sensitive to blue light, within 48 hours, there were over 7,500 websites that advertise contact lens and lenses that filter out the blue light to eliminate photophobia. What they didn't understand is that was only true for blind patients. But 99.9% of the migrant patient in the world have normal eyesight, and only blocking the blue light would do absolutely nothing, would make no difference. Blue light alone, blocking just blue light, does not. You need to block way more than that. So here is how it came along. This question that came really triggered a whole large study, NIH-funded study, that was focused on the effect of color on photophobia. So we took migrant patients with normal eyesight and exposed them to blue and yellow and red and white and green, and found out that blue and red are most painful and aversive.
Blue and red light.
Okay. Both sides of the visual spectrum make the headache more painful, make the throbbing more pronounced and painful, make the headache spread from one side to both sides, from the front to the back, or the back to the front. And in addition, create a whole host of unpleasant autonomic sensations like dizziness, lightheadedness, shortness of breath, increased heart rate, increased blood pressure, tightness in the throat, teary eyes, stuffy nose, a whole host of really unpleasant sensations. The list is very long. In contrast, so after red and blue, there are two more lights that were painful, almost equally painful, just a notch less than the red and the red and the blue. Yellow or amber and white. They all brought the headache up as the intensity of the light increased. In contrast, to our surprise, because there was no logic and no sense, green light did exactly the opposite. It decreased the headache and decreased the magnitude of all the autonomic symptoms I just described. That was the finding. It continued to come patient after patient after patient. Now, just to put some perspective into that, when a migrant patient goes to a room with too much light, the headache does not go from 0 to 10. It goes up 20%, from 7 to 8, from 5 to 7.
So the light increases the intensity of the pain by about 20%?
About 20-25%. Rarely it's a modulator. It's not a stimulus by itself. So it increased the light a little bit. When we turn off the light, the pain doesn't go from 10 to 0. It goes from 10 to 8, or it goes from 8 to 6. So you would say, why is it so important? It's important because the difference between 6 and 8 is between unbearable and bearable pain. At 8, for many patients, the headache is so unbearable that they have to quit work. They can't take care of the kids. They can't make dinner. They have to quit life and go to a dark room and live in social isolation, isolating from the world. 6 is bearable. They can still take care of what they need to do in life. So the burden of the disease changed dramatically when you take the headache from an unbearable to a bearable level.
So let me ask you, does it go by the same percentage if you're at a 2 to a 4 or from a 4 to a 6? Does it really matter what level you're at?
No, usually it will go up by about 20%. It will go down by about 20% from wherever it is. If a patient have a headache, of course, it's subjective. There are patients with a headache of 4 think that it's a worst thing that happened to them. And there are patients with a headache of 10 that think that it's not a big deal. Yet there are patients with a headache of 10 that are totally dysfunctional. And so it's subjective. So a patient with a pain of 4, when you take it to 2, they can function. And at 4, they define themselves as dysfunctional. So it's subjective how they deal with the pain. It's who they are, how they were raised, how their parents brought them up. Did they learn to complain? How satisfied, dissatisfied they are with life. There are many things that will determine why in one patient, 6 is impossible, in another patient, 10 is impossible. But the important part is as we go with from light to dark or from light to green light in our case, it only goes down by enough to make it bearable. Now, I'm saying only half of the story now because I'm describing to you a study which was academic study at Harvard where we only exposed patients to 2 to 3 minutes for each light because it was a study of understanding the direction. Now, when we are studying patients under 2 or 3 or 4 hours in light, we see differences that are much larger. I'll get to that at the end of this interview. So
stay tuned. Yeah. Don't miss it. Yeah, that's a good cliffhanger for us. Yeah.
No, I'm probably too excited, but it's...
We're all excited. This is really important because one of the things that we've heard separates migraine from other types of headache is this photophobia. Is it true in any other type of headache as a diagnostic criteria?
So for most part, the answer is yes. Light, the photophobia is a part of the classification of migraine. Migraine patients are photophobic, phonophobic, osmophobic. Other patients with other headaches are not. Of course, there's a huge question. Why is it that people with back pain, with sciatica, with toothache, with earache, are not photophobic? Why is it that migraine is the only headache that is associated with photophobia, where light make the headache more painful?
I wish I knew. Tell us.
So we have the answer on how it happens in the thalamus, how it is so specific to migraine. Why? We don't really know. What we do know is that what we do believe is that the reason is because the pain signal of migraine begin in a dura, in a meninges, inside the head. And it's really, and if you think about it, all pain that begin in the meninges, like meningitis, like intracranial bleed that are associated with headache, intracranial tumor, these diseases, this condition that involve activation of pain fibers that send signal from the intracranial, from the dura inside the head into the brain, are all associated with photophobia, where the headache that they get is increased by light. But no other pain that we know is really increased by light.
Now, you talked about the different types of light. I know that certain types are really irritating to me, like fluorescent lights. What types of light, white, blue, green, red, white, are more irritating and more comfortable, or say less healthy and more healthy?
So sunlight is almost always uncomfortable to migraine patients, which will explain how common it is that migraine patients walk around with sunglasses, even in days that are not very very bright because it's cloudy or whatever. Any flickering light, like the fluorescent light, which happened in many offices, most offices in the world, is uncomfortable because the flickering of the light exacerbates the headache tremendously. And the light, in contrast, the light for all other light sources, it's really the color of the light. As long as they don't flicker, And if the color goes into a very narrow band of green light, it's calming and soothing and comforting, whereas all other colors of light are not.
Where do we find green light?
Regular green light starts here and ends here in terms of the human visible spectrum. It goes like 100 or 80 nanometer. Because it is so wide, it activates not only the receptors that are sensitive to green in our retina, but also the receptors that are sensitive to blue and the receptors that are sensitive to red. Therefore, regular green light that you buy anywhere is not going to do it. What you need to do is to devise a light bulb where the nanometer shrink to about 10 nanometer, a very narrow band of green light that can escape the blue and the red and only activate the photoreceptors that are sensitive to green. So, the first light bulb that I got was $50,000.
Not in my budget.
Can't do that. The second light bulb that we developed was $12,000.
Also a bit pricey.
The third light bulb that we developed was $4,000. The fourth generation was $800. And now we are around $250. We dropped from $50,000 to $250 in about a year. And now we are finally getting to a point that we are in a position to give it to patients. And as you know, it's not devices that every 30 days you have to pay more so that they don't stop working. This is a light bulb that you get as many as you need to your home, but then it lasts for a lifetime. It's a one-time investment. But so, do we have the technology to develop it? Yes, we do. We have the technology and we are starting to make it available to patients. To do that, I put myself together with three founders, entrepreneurs, who came from Harvard Business School, Harvard Law School, and with three people, we put together a company that aims to bring this very narrow band of green light to migraine patients. And so we are just beginning to do up and running. We don't have hundreds of thousands of those. We are just starting to figure it out. But of course, so are we making it available to patients? Yes. What it comes with is something that is way more important than that. Once this technology became available, now it was worthwhile testing in real life. And testing it in real life means going back to the Harvard clean conditions of academia and expose migraine patient to green light, not for 3 minutes, but for 4 hours or 3 hours, and see what happened in real life. And in real life, they are in a room. They can be in a room by themselves. And we want to know what green light does to them. Do they adapt and in few minutes the effect of the green light is completely gone, or does it stay and get better? So we just started these studies, and the first group of patients that we studied show us that if we keep them in green light for 90 minutes, 120 minutes, into the 2 hours, 2.5 hours, slowly the headache goes away completely in many of them. In some of them, it improved by almost 80%. And what comes with it is things that we didn't put together. They are no longer anxious. They are no longer blocked by cognitive decline. They can't communicate. They can't say the words correctly. Their words don't come right. They have a hard time to construct a sentence. Over 2 hours, they talk about the fact that the fog in the front of their head, or in the front part of the brain, begin to lift and they begin to think more clearly. They start using, instead of saying that they are angry and irritable and depressed and anxious, mostly anxious, like the whole world is falling apart and into become fragmented and they cannot function the way the weight of the world is on them. They begin to talk about soothing and relaxing and feeling happy and feeling like a burden is lifted out of them. They are now becoming one, not a fragmented person, but a whole human being that can function again. This, in addition to the fact that the nausea is going away and the headache is decreasing, not going away in all of them, but decreasing clearly to the level they can function, and the throbbing is going away. But remember, the most important part of it is we are not developing green light to be a magic medication. We developed it to allow patient to say, look, they keep saying one of the biggest reason why migraine has such a burden on their life is because it forces them to quit what they do and go to a dark room. They can't read, they can't function, they can't talk to other people. They can't walk.
Yeah.
They can't walk, they can't be a part of the family. So what we want to give them is an environment where they can walk, where they can be with the family, where they can be functional and sociable under a light condition that makes them, by the way, feel better, which was not the goal of going into that. The goal was to replace total darkness. And I can tell you, the green light that we give them is at an intensity that they can freely read and write and function and do anything that they want to do.
On a practical level, I have to ask you, many people are using things like light filtering glasses that have special filters, or they're using screen filters to try to cut down on their exposure to blue light or to sunlight. Are those really helpful scientifically, or are those just comforting to us?
So cutting down blue light in general is good for you. Blue light is very excitatory. It clearly plays a role in setting the biological clock, which explains why it's not right for you to stay in blue, to look at blue light like screen and phones and computer and television before you go to sleep, because it keeps you awake, which we hear especially from the younger generation, the teenager who spend so much time on the screen. There are many reasons not related to headache and migraine of why health-wise it is healthy to cut blue light. Filtering. To be able to filter everything but green light on a lens like this of a coin is $5,000. To do it on a glass, on lenses for glasses, would be way more expensive than that. Precision in filtering belongs to light microscopy. It's what Zeiss does and charge for it tens of thousands of dollars. It is a very difficult technology to bring into optics, into contact lens and glasses, and assume that we can just filter so the glasses look green, look somewhat brown, and you think that it is that they filter the blue light. They do. Some of it, not all of it. To filter all of it, the price will be way beyond consumer ability to pay for it. So is it filtering? Do we need to develop different technology to block everything? Pixels in glasses, whatever, maybe. It is filtering alone is going to be extremely complicated to bring down in terms of price to the point that you can use it. We just don't have this technology. We have it in light microscopy, but that's commercial usage. That's not for people to use.
Some of the leading neuro-ophthalmologists who we've interviewed have told us that it's really not healthy for people to spend too much time in the dark, even though it might help them. What's your opinion on that?
Well, I think that we all need to sleep. And because it's important for the well-being of our brain. When we sleep, our brain clears toxins, molecular waste and toxins, out of the brain, so we don't get dementia and Alzheimer and all of that. We know a lot about it, and we know that we sleep much better in the dark than we sleep in the light. I think that for being in the dark when we sleep is really important. There is no real benefit for anything whatsoever for us during the day to be in the dark. Light is important. It's important for our mood. People who don't have migraine really like colors. Their mood gets better when they see many colors. Migraine patients are a little bit different. They do like colors, but clearly green light is more comfortable, and it has a better effect on their positive emotions and lesser effect on their negative emotion than other colors. But if you ask them, they'll tell you. If you ask 100 patients, you'll get equal distribution of brown and yellow and red and blue and green. They are not aware of it. But if you put them together, you realize, and you monitor it, you realize that the things that are beyond the perception, how much more comfortable it is in terms of cognition, emotion, and physiological function to be in the green light.
It's fascinating. So one last question. Yes. We call light sensitivity photophobia. And when I think of phobias, I think of emotional fears. Is this completely biological, or is there a fear-related component or an emotional component to photophobia?
So there is an emotional component to the photophobia, and I think that the right word is aversion to light. I think that if it were up to me, it would not be photophobia, it would be aversion to light. And aversion is because light is so aversive. If it makes patient cry and get stressed and irritable and anxious and depressed, and they use all this word, I'm agitated, I have no patience, that's one negative emotion. They go through physiological changes that are uncomfortable, dry mouth, dizziness, lightheadedness, shortness of breath, nausea, a whole host of things that are simply not comfortable. And if that's what light does, you don't want to feel anxious, and you don't want to feel like you have a shortness of breath, and you don't want to feel dizzy and lightheaded, and you don't want to feel like your throat is choking like from the anxiety, and you feel like palpitation and heart rate. This is aversion. This is aversive. In addition to the pain, the fact that it makes the pain more painful. So if you put it all together, it's aversion to light. And so where we are trying to go is really not after big words like photophobia and migraine. We try to go after aversion to light, try to decrease sensitivity to light, which really comes to aversion to light in headache patients. It broadened it, and it is not a CGRP monoclonal antibody. It is not $1 billion investment in a drug that the FDA looks at. It's very different. It's environment. It's light.
I think everybody will be paying a lot better attention to the light in their environment after listening to this talk. It's been really fascinating. Any final words on migraine and light sensitivity and aversion?
Yes, I think that migraine patients who complain bitterly about their repeated need to live in isolation in a dark and quiet room because it's the only way that they get a relief, they escape into that, should know that there is a solution, there is a hope that we are pushing quickly into their life. We are all aware of it, and we are trying to target the photophobia itself. We are trying to give them a solution that will save them the need to run to a dark room and get isolated and allow them to continue to function as everybody else.
That's very exciting. We're going to continue to follow your research and see where it leads. Dr. Burstein, thank you so much for joining us on the Migraine World Summit.
It's a pleasure. You're doing a holy work. It's so fantastic. It's so important. We are all behind you, and we follow you. If you help us spread solutions to migrant patients that will make the life of one patient better, you do your job.
We're doing our best.
Yeah, fantastic.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much.